You are listening to a podcast from West Hill United Church, located in Scarborough, Ontario, Canada. These podcasts are made possible by the generous support of our listeners, volunteers, and members of our community. To donate, go to our website, www.westhill.net, and click on the Canada Helps button, or go to westhill.net/donate.
And I do suggest that you give it some consideration. And I also forgot to mention that if you're new to this service, you can fill this out and we'll get you a tag and get some information for you. Okay, are there any other in-minute spots? Okay. The Truth and Reconciliation Committee. Each week, this is a call to action. Each week, in order to remain aware of our treaty obligations and the relationships we have with our First Nation sisters and brothers, we read one of the 94 recommendations sent to all levels of government by the Truth and Reconciliation Commission. We expect to complete these readings by June 2017. Recommendation number one, we call upon all levels of governments to enable residential school survivors and their families to reclaim their names changed by the residential school system by waiving administrative costs for a period of 5 years for the name change process and the revision of official identity documents such as birth certificates, passports, driver's licenses, health cards, status certificates, and social insurance numbers.
Movies, Scrooge, and she would prefer to watch the ladies' number one detective agency, so that wasn't so. And then I recorded some beautiful Christmas music I grew up with, but they were too interfering with her hearing aid, so that didn't work. And here I was trying to give her Christmas, and the particulars didn't work out. And at one point, she's so limited, she's so crippled and so frail. And she said she was sitting there thinking of all the things that were her blessings. And she looked at me and she said, and you, and my sister, of course, and Greta, are the biggest blessings. And I thought, the centering song is, beauty is in the giving. And I thought, it's the giving of ourselves. And that can ground you in the middle of so much change. So much that's different. That wasn't shocking change for me, but it was different. And we feel we lose when things change. But to ground ourselves in that gift of giving that's ourselves is always there. I have a medley later on in the service that carries on that theme, but we'll just center ourselves around that idea of beauty.
We spend a time together each week considering the things that are happening around the world, happening in our lives, in our communities, in our families, and sharing them in this space with one another, whether they're things that delight us and bring us great joy, or they're things that disturb us and cause us great concern or despair. And bringing those two things together, the greatest of human exhilaration and the deepest of human sorrow creates a resilience in our own hearts because we can see possibility and we can resonate as those who gather in community to hold something that is difficult and to find ways to move through it, confident that even as we meet challenges that we aren't going to be able to overcome, we respond to them with care and with concern, and we strengthen one another as we do that. So I invite you each week to speak first. If you could bring up the next slide, we have a great watercolor painting of the globe today, of the world, which is beautiful. And we think of, perhaps looking at this picture, those colors that you really dislike. You know, it could be blue, it could be red, whatever color is not yours, can perhaps bring to you a recognition that there's much that's going on around the world that is not as we would choose for it to be, that despair and sorrow and confusion and chaos. And so at the beginning of this sharing time, each week we name those places or those groups in the world who remain in situations of conflict and chaos and concern, and we name them in this place just in an effort to bring them to our attention, to place them in our hearts, to invite ourselves to walk alongside that challenge in the coming weeks. So I invite you, just from where you are, to name those places or those groups that you feel are in need of our attention, our concern, and our diligent action this week. As we go through the motions of our everyday and step into the extraordinary opportunities we have each week, may we find ways that we can be attentive to, share information about, deepen understanding around those issues that have been named here, those places that have been named, and the concerns they live with, and all of those that come to our attention in this coming week.
That's celebrating justice and goodness, and I would just want to celebrate beauty for my, I don't even know how to put this into words. Sadly, Greta has heard me try several, many times already. I haven't got it yet. Okay, so years ago, I heard on the radio this snatch of a carol, a Christmas carol. So beautiful, I could barely move away and go on. And I didn't know what it was. And I've been searching for it ever since. Searching, like Googling. And all I knew was a little bit of words. I thought it was God Rest You Merry Gentlemen to a different tune. It wasn't all. Searching. And then I kept saying to Greta, and Greta tried to help. And we couldn't find it. And I was bereft to find this lost piece of perfect beauty. And so then, Christmas Day, I'm searching again. And arrangement. Greta suggested an arrangement, so I did that. Ralph Vaughan Williams' Fantasia on Christmas Carols. And I found it at midnight on Christmas.
Thanks to your wife's suggestion.
Thanks. I thought I already had actually acknowledged
her. You just kind of glossed over it.
I suppose since I'm celebrating beauty, I should include her as many times as I can. What I want to say is he put together three or four carols with such orchestration, such chord changes underneath, and a boys' choir desk on top. I heard another snatch Christmas Eve coming home from my mother's, and I lost it. I couldn't find it. But it is so beautiful. My car lifted off the road, and I lift out of my chair. So I celebrate the beauty that some creative people can put together that transport me beyond, just the beauty of those notes, the harmony, and the conjunction of different things that we humans have been able to come up with such beauty. And something else may be that beautiful to you. A painting or a sculpture or a moment or nature or whatever, but that we can, and I just wanted to celebrate that rich depth of beauty that brings such a joy even in the middle of difficult circumstances. So, in this abundant blessing.
You shared it, John. Maybe we can play it at the end of the service. If you can find it online. That would be great. Thank you, Scott. It's dancing through the snow. No, we're going to play it on the sound system. Okay. Does anyone else have anything to add to our moments? Then I invite you to again look at that beautiful watercolor of the map of the world, and think about all your favorite colors. If we could have the next slide, which ones of those are your beautiful favorite, light up your life colors, and think of all of the exquisite wonder that's happening in the world, beauty that's unfolding, music and art and literature and relationships that gift this world incredibly. And in amongst that work are individuals and groups that are turning what is wrong into what is right with their hands, with their hearts, with their voices, with the things that they write, with the art that they present, with the skills that they share. And so at the end of our sharing time each week, we name those groups or individuals that we believe are making a difference in the world and turning what is bleak into what is beautiful.
The first reading today is from Arnold Bennett. You probably know him as a novelist, for instance, for The Old Wives' Tale. He was a journalist. He was a propagandist, during World War II, which did not mean have the ugly connotations it has today. But he was a very prolific writer. The chief, and what he wrote, which I'm quoting, "The chief beauty about time is that you cannot waste it in advance. The next year, the next day, the next hour are lying ready for you, as perfect as unspoiled, as if you had never wasted or misapplied a single moment in all your life. You can turn over a new leaf every hour, if you so choose." And the second reading is from Neil Gaiman, a blogist, a graphic novelist. He writes and co-writes what I used to know as comic books, and something my parents vehemently disapproved of. They felt it was junk reading. They're now recognized, as an art form in their own right. And he's very much influenced by fantasy writers and so on. And he once said that the reason he loves writing graphic novels is it's because it's virtually virgin territory. And what he writes is this: "I hope that in this year to come, you make mistakes. Because if you are making mistakes, then you are making new things. Trying new things, learning, living, pushing yourself, changing your world. You're doing things you've never done before, and more importantly, you're doing something. So that's my wish for you and all of us, and my wish for myself. Make new mistakes. Make glorious, amazing mistakes. Make mistakes nobody's ever made before. Don't freeze, don't stop, don't worry that it isn't good enough or it isn't perfect. Whatever it is, art or love or work or family or life, whatever it is you're scared of doing, do it. Make your mistakes next year and forever. Offered as wisdom for the journey.
May we walk in its light."
I wanted to play a medley this morning, but I didn't want it to be something we would all totally recognize, because I want to bring the idea that there are many people in this city and in this region, in this province, in this country, for whom Christmas is either nothing or strange or difficult. And I'm not trying to bring us down with that. What I want to do is play you a medley of Christmas carols. If you put the next slide up, Peter. It wasn't saved. All right. I pressed save, but it didn't work. Anyway, I'll tell you what they are. Some of them you will know. There they are. Okay. Lesser known, perhaps, and nonetheless. And I just want us to stretch our thoughts for those for whom something is very different, but we can connect at the level of care and love and justice and kindness and integrity and honesty. So I'm going to play, some you may know, some you very recognize, but I will play a different tune, usually the British tune. It's not as much sung here. But let's go on a couple days after Christmas medley, perhaps not as familiar, but that's the point. That's the point.
Last year, at the beginning of November, end of November, beginning of November, I launched a project that I was going to work on for an entire year, recognizing that the work that we do here is work that other people enjoy and sometimes look to for resources for their own communities, for their own personal lives and their families. And so I wanted to create a resource that clergy people who are working with the lectionary, that's the standard three-year cycle of biblical readings that many clergy use to prepare their services, prepare resources that would allow them to do kind of post-theistic stuff, to create a more theologically barrier-free space so that the people in their community who are traditional believers would still be being grounded in the words of readings that they find are particularly helpful, and those who came into the space who didn't have those beliefs would still feel welcome because the language would include other things. And so I started at the beginning of Advent, which is, it's an arbitrarily chosen beginning of the Christian year, a year that when books weren't readily available allowed a Christian community to move through all the major themes and stories related to Jesus' life. And so they started that at the beginning of, or at the end of November or beginning of December, and had 4 weeks of that, and then they'd celebrate Christmas and then Epiphany and then on into Lent and Easter and Pentecost and then the weeks after Pentecost to tell the rest of the story, and it would all begin again in Advent. So each week, unbeknownst to you, I was actually reading the scripture passages for that Sunday that would be used in the coming year so that I would be able to publish at the end of November a piece of work online that people could access. Now, we got a little derailed, with this United Church thing going on. So I didn't finish last year's, but I started again this Advent. So each week, I've looked at the scripture passages that are in the lectionary for next year's readings, that's year A, and I've worked to find a theme and some alternate readings and to write some other resources that can be used by other congregations to create a more barrier-free space. So, today is a particularly important reading which has a lot, with which we resonate a lot because of the work that we've been doing here at West Hill, and because it's a story that I think needs to be told at this time in humanity's history, in the evolution of our thought, in the growing unease in our world. And I think it's a story that needs to be told so that we can actually learn from it. And the story is a story that has been created in order to fulfill certain things that were in the Hebrew texts at the time to validate that this child's birth, for which, of course, there was absolutely no record, but to validate that this man had been born in extraordinary circumstances and certain things happened that fulfilled these prophecies. And I talked last week, I think, about how we, how you go back and you find the significant things and then you weave them into the story as you're writing it if you want to. If you get any sort of online novel writer, it'll tell you how to do that so you can write your own novel if you want. But the story for this particular Sunday, which is the first Sunday after Christmas, is the story about the family, Joseph, Mary, and the baby Jesus, fleeing to Egypt. Jesus in the story would have been actually about two probably, but fleeing to Egypt, becoming a refugee, yes. And that's why I think that this is so important a story for us right now. And so I'm going to tell you a little bit about my thoughts about that and then go back into the idea of a new start that jumps off from any kind of refugee situation. Yesterday, Scott and I had the opportunity to spend time with Raihan Abir and his wife Samia and their daughter Sophie, and we had this wonderful time. I'm not sure if many of you saw the article in the Globe and Mail on Raihan and Samia. Some of you did. It actually, although we'd been involved with Raihan's refugee case here in Canada through the Center for Inquiry, I didn't know a lot about the story because most of the time that we were involved with the story, I didn't know who he was. Like, I didn't know his name at all. It was all very confidential because of the security issues. So now that he has received his refugee status, there has been some publicity about it, but our involvement is still not publicized, and I'll have the camera trimmed here so that this is not online. Our involvement in terms of applying for a grant from Toronto Conference and making that available to Raihan for his refugee process, that grant for $5,000, isn't known publicly because the knowledge that a Christian church supported an atheist fleeing from Bangladesh may create some backlash against Christian communities and atheists further in Bangladesh. So that information, our involvement, is not publicly known. But if you've read the Globe and Mail article, you'll know that there are things in Raihan's story that are so horrific that it's hard to even get our heads around them. I spoke last February for the first time about the machete death of Avijit Roy. And then I spoke a few months later about Ananta Das, who had been also hacked to death. And then I spoke a few months later about the publisher who was killed and another one injured and others injured in attacks. And all of those people are Raihan's closest circle of support. Avijit Roy was one of his closest friends. They were texting 20 minutes before Avijit was hacked to death on the street and his wife was injured in that attack in February. Ananta had worked with him. His publisher was killed. And so we're having, I'm bouncing a baby and we're chatting about the coolest furniture in the world, which is what Samia does. She designs and creates furniture, which is amazing. And we're having a great time and we're engaging in stories. And life has been tragically horrific for Raihan and Samia in this last year. And yet they are so ready for this new start. They are courageously looking for ways to begin again, looking for a new place to live, looking for new opportunities so Samia can begin the work of getting her furniture production happening again. And Raihan is continuing his doctorate in astrophysics, working on that and making sure that he can continue in that work and present that. And the whole idea of a new start given to those who have left tragically horrific situations is something that at this time of the year we sometimes think about. We put it in play when we talk about New Year's resolutions. I'm going to take this on. I'm going to do this. I'm going to lose weight or start, exercising or learn to crochet or paint my house or whatever. We make these commitments that we're going to do. But the story that comes out of the creation of the narrative around Jesus, that story starts at the beginning of the year after Christmas with this story of fleeing. The story of fleeing what is so overwhelmingly terrifying that it means you can no longer stay in your home. You must leave and go somewhere else. And so the readings that I chose were about making a new start. The quotes that I'm going to read with you are about new beginnings. And I wanted us to have that understanding of refugees in our heads. I find it alarming to hear the rhetoric coming out of the Republican Party in the United States, which aligns itself so strongly with Christian roots and yet has this antipathy toward refugees when this story is central to the faith that they say they are following. Scott was reading me some statistics that were shared by a member of the congregation earlier this week that when I talk about these stories as being narratives built by a certain people to tell a certain story for a certain purpose, I'm talking about it as something that has been created by authors, human authors, to tell that story. But 75% of Americans believe all those stories to be literally true. So if they're literally true, I mean, for us, we can take the power of that story, metaphorically or real, we can take that power of the story and translate it into our everyday world, into what's going on in our world now. And those who take it literally, I would hope, would do that so much more purposefully. So there is much work to be done. But the idea of starting anew and being a refugee and moving on to something else imposes itself upon us now as it never has before. We have, along this strip of Kingston Road, had motels that have been turned into refuges for refugees over the course of the year, or the years that I've been here. Different groups being represented in those motels over the different years, as there were hot spots around the world where crises were erupting and conflict was going unabated, and so a certain group of refugees would show up in these motels, and we would see them shift and change over the course of the years as different areas of the world were inflamed with conflict. But I'm convinced that the number of places that conflict is going to be so huge, and the number of places that are going to be experiencing economic disaster and breakdown is going to continue to grow. And economic migrants, as refugees, will be making their way around the world. We're moving into a much more transient population than we have ever had before. So my question at this point in time is, who gets to say where the new start happens? And who gets to say how the next start happens? And what do we do in light of the fact that we live in a resource-rich country with a lot of space? And we have borders that we must make permeable in some significant way. The greeting of refugees by Justin Trudeau at the airport has gone around the world as a symbol of how we should be embracing refugees, and all countries should. There are challenges and concerns that have to be overcome, of course, as we do this work, and that has to be ongoing. We can't just assume that, you know, we can stick a welcome card on the wall and not expect some problems as well. There's going to be problems, and we're going to have to work them out. But that is a challenge that we can face as we go about this. One of the movements that is probably followed most closely by any security forces in Canada is the No One Is Illegal movement, where activists argue that people belong on the earth and that national boundaries that say where they can stay and where they can move, that those boundaries are superimposed upon humanity, and humanity should be able to move wherever the resources are available and wherever there is opportunity for life to be led in a peaceful, nonviolent manner. So that group deserves some of our attention, if some of its methods sometimes don't deserve our respect. So I want to go, can we go to the next slide? I've got a number of quotes here that I've pulled up. Are they there? Yes. This is the first quote by T.S. Eliot from Little Gidding. And I just wanted you to look at these, and if there's anything that jumps out at you, not necessarily in terms of the idea of refugees, but how our world has been up to this point and the voices that have articulated it, what groups have given it form, who have set the agenda, who have named the things that have been important, and these new voices coming forward in the new year, who are those voices? Where are they coming from? What are we prepared to hear? And so I'm just having you read that and think about that. And is there anyone who wants to, has any reflections on that? It's good. Thank you, Louise. Yeah, it's a good opening for us to think about how we make a new start. Most of us will not make the kind of dramatic start that Raihan and Samia and Sophie have made. Well, Sophie just got born, but that's dramatic too. But, you know, our starts are limited by our own perspective. And if we sort of erase that, you know, all the prejudices and the many ways that we have confined our perspective, and head into every moment, I think the next quote says it very well. Can you give me the next one? As long as I'm breathing, in my eyes, I'm just beginning. I love that idea. That as long as I'm alive, this next moment is something entirely new. We often don't think that. I get up every morning and have exactly the same thing for breakfast every day. Right? Doesn't occur to me, oh, I could try something else. I just do it because that's what I do, and that's fine. It's my breakfast. But if I never had a new thought, or I didn't read a new kind of book, or I didn't consider engaging in a conversation with someone I wouldn't normally talk to, or open my brain to let their ideas in to wrestle with mine for a while, then maybe I'm not still really breathing. As long as I'm breathing, it's a new beginning every moment. Can I see? Yes? Go ahead. Oh, yeah, go back. No, not that one. Go back.
The word I there, it's not just that life is beginning or the good is beginning, but I just like the emphasis on I am beginning. I'm in the driver's seat about how I respond to this life that's beginning today. But I just like that. It's me who chooses each time.
Now, the next one I'm going to, you've already had a glimpse of it, Toto. I have a feeling we're not in Kansas anymore. We all know that's from The Wizard of Oz. Frank Baum wrote that book. Frank was an atheist, and when you know that and watch the movie again, there's residual stuff throughout the entire movie that brings his perspective to the fore. But if we were going to say, okay, I have a feeling we're not in Kansas anymore, meaning, you know, something is not the norm that we thought it was. What are the things that you think are not the norm anymore? Like, we're not that anymore. What are those things that in your life or the community or your family are not the norm anymore? You're not in Kansas. Does anyone have anything that they can think of that they have moved from?
Families aren't the same anymore.
Yeah. Yes, families. They have, our understanding of family has shifted dramatically. It's not as clear cut as it used to be in the past. Thank you, Shelley. Anyone else?
And families are not geographically together.
Right. Yes. That's right. Family was all geographically, or they split a little piece of property off the farm and built the house for the kids, and you know, there was a lot of support inherent in the geographical proximity of families. Thank you, Ingrid. Anyone else? It is a generational change. There were in the last few weeks, though, there were over 800 people who had their licenses suspended for drinking and driving, which kind of surprised me. I did think that was a something that wasn't as prevalent anymore, but the RIDE program this month has shown up. But it's not as, you know, accepted as before. Like, we used to, people would drink and drive, and you know, you'd get in the car with them and not even think about it, right? But now there's a certain stigma attached to it.
If someone can have an opinion or take a photograph and now press the button and it goes all over the world, that is not the world of 25 years ago, only years ago, which is really a good thing and a very risky thing. Mm-hmm.
Our privacy is not, we can't protect our privacy in the ways that we used to before, right? And also, that also allows change to happen very quickly in ways it didn't before, because opinions can be swayed on the internet very, very quickly. There are movements that shame corporations online intentionally in order to change their behavior, because they're operating in an area where there are no laws that they can be held to. But if they are shamed publicly for what it is they're doing, then they may back down from that. And in the area of climate and those kinds of things, where there are no laws really governing some of that stuff yet, they haven't been written yet, those are the tactics that some people are taking. And that very public access to information is part of that. Anything else? Anne?
Climate change.
Yeah, it feels like we're in Kansas, actually. Yeah. Yeah, climate change has made a huge change, and Paris is going to have a huge impact on the choices that we make going forward and how to live within them. Walt? That's right. And many of those are areas, Walter was saying, we've changed in a number of different areas, our understanding of sexuality and gender, a number of different ways that we've shifted our opinions on a variety of different issues, many of which would have been considered moral absolutes based, grounded in religious traditions. And those are shifting. Where does life begin? Where does life end? Who has the power over life and death? And how do we allow that conversation to take forward, to go forward, and where do we see ourselves in it, rather than just responding to an absolute truth? John? Yes, economic realities mean that people who are graduating from school, high school, or post-secondary education, who go into the workforce, I think the average is they're now expected to have about 8 different careers during their lifetime, whereas we expected to have one, probably with the same company. So that has changed dramatically. Anyone else?
The best medical science, many of us have heard
that we'd be born. Yeah, I would have lived to 8 is what I would have lived to, and probably not lived beyond that. And then after that, maybe 17, and then after that, maybe 23. Like, there's no way I would be here if it weren't for the advances in medical science. Absolutely.
Didn't that line come to the movie when it turned color? It was in color, and then she got to Oz, and it was in color, right? Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Yeah. So that's that we see in more detail what we know just in the world of, say, microscopes or telescopes or anything. We can see way really ground colors that we didn't even know existed before. Mm-hmm. So we're able to know things we couldn't possibly because of equipment that now
right.
sees things in color versus black and white.
Yes, yes. And the interesting thing about black and white is I read a passage to you out of a novel I was reading over Christmas, and it was about war. In war, everything is black and white. You know, there's the enemy or there's the ally. There's the good and there's the bad. But the reality of that isn't true. We think that, but the reality is that there are really bad people on the good side, and there are people who love deeply on the side that we consider evil and the complexities of that. So the black and white, we don't live in a black and white world, although we like to think that the past everything was simple, black and white, and that we move into the color. But maybe the next quote, which was out there earlier, I love this quote. A bridge of silver wings stretches from the dead ashes of an unforgiving nightmare to the jeweled vision of a life started anew. I don't think that Rayhan and Samia would say that it was an unforgiving nightmare where they came from. Their families were there, the people they loved, their communities, the support. But at the same time, the realities of the rise of a religious fanaticism that is so violent and wreaks this kind of terror became this unforgiving nightmare. Or the black and white of The Wizard of Oz turns into the jeweled vision of life started anew. There's hope, there's possibility, there's dreams. And those, as I'm trying to hammer home, there's no such thing as hope without a hammer, that we have to actually do things to make these things happen, to create the nation that welcomes refugees, the nation that is tolerant of a wide variety of perspectives on the beginning of life and the end of life, that allows individuals to wrestle with those issues themselves and come up to their own understanding, a place where diverse perspectives can come together in conversation, compelling conversations can take place, and we can find our way toward that, you know, jeweled vision of life started anew, constantly casting it before us and then trying to figure out how to get there. So I appreciated the readings that came from the passages today that I jumped off of. But there was another reading I wanted to read to you from Rainer Maria Rilke, which is also a reading about starting anew. And it's about, in his last line, he's saying that here's this year before us, this incredible year before us, and let's make sure that for the people who really need it to be different, that we don't let that sort of fall through the cracks. And now let us believe in a long year that is given to us, new, untouched, full of things that have never been, full of work that has never been done, full of tasks, claims, and demands. And let us see that we learn to take it without letting fall too much of what it has to bestow upon those who demand of it necessary, serious, and great things. So this world awaits. It's not actually sitting out there full of all that and it's just coming to us. I don't have a fatalistic perspective on that. But it is possibility and potential. And there are people that are counting on it, being different, bringing them peace, offering them freedom and safety, caring for them medically, giving them the permission to care for their lives in a certain way. They're waiting for that. So let us not compromise that in any way and allow them to be let down. Let us do everything we can to allow those things to happen that must happen for the change, the serious change that needs to happen, to happen. Because there are people around this world for whom this is a new year, a new day, and they're counting on it being one in which their lives are full and rich in their own control and lived without fear of terror or loss or anger or violence. It's a new year. It's a new year. It's a new moment. And I'm hoping that we all celebrate it and bring the best it has to be into being. One of the songs that Scott used in his medley, I Heard the Bells on Christmas Day, was written by Longfellow. And it was during one of the great wars that our southern neighbor had, and he was filled with despair at what humanity was doing to humanity and the horrific realities that were hammering themselves out in his country. And then he heard the bells, literally, on Christmas Day. And he had this overwhelming sense that good would out, that the right would overcome what was so wrong in his country, that humanity's possibility would grow and evolve and bloom beautifully. And he wrote that song. It's not necessarily the ancient story. It's not even a retelling. It's not letting go and coming up with our new story. It's being inspired by hope, inspired enough to be that building of a new world, that turning wrong into right, that leaning into injustice until we break it down. It's that new year that happens every new moment and allows us to be something that we, in despair, never thought we could be. So go out into that new year. Embrace the possibilities, see them sparkling before you, and find ways to weave yourself into a tapestry of light and beauty that at the end of that year, you know, this human construction that we call a year, at the end of that, we'll see that the world has turned slightly toward goodness, slightly more toward light, slightly more toward the creating of a place of peace in which all can live. And it will have done so because of what you have poured out of your heart. Go into that world and make it beautiful. Go in peace. Well, we could. Do you want to go back and sing the whole song?
I don't know
if that's good. Yeah, let's go back and sing the whole song. You know this song. Play the song. Sorry, I was supposed to do this in the perspectives. It's the song that was in the perspectives. I don't know the name. It's okay. But don't worry, just leave that. Okay. Sorry. Oh, this is my mistake. My apologies. It's on your papers, When Love is Shared. Beautiful world. Okay? So just go out and make a beautiful world. Thank you. Scott, you're good. Thanks.
You have been listening to a podcast from West Hill United Church located in Scarborough, Ontario, Canada. These podcasts are made possible by the generous support of our listeners, volunteers, and members of our community. To donate, go to our website, www.westhill.net, and click on the Canada Helps button, or go to www.westhill.net/donate.